This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm Gaius, John Batchelor, and Germanicus, Michael Vlahos, is here, and we're looking 2,000 years into the future at decisions being made in Brussels and in Moscow about these next weeks and months and years of Europe following the Ukraine conflict, the biggest, most threatening conflict in Europe since 1945, something that easily could move into a world war unless. Germanicus, right now, Moscow wanted us to know about the meeting that Vladimir Putin held with his generals. Moscow wanted us to know that Mr. Putin is traveling to Minsk to meet with Lukashenko, the dictator of Belarus. Moscow wanted us to know that Shoigu, the defense minister, traveled to the front line following the meeting in Moscow. Moscow wanted us to know all that. It is just an image that comes up when I saw the news of the meeting. The Wolfschlucht, Zweite, the Wolf's Canyon, where the dictator traveled in June of 1944 following the successful landing of, at that point, there were about 250,000 Allied troops on shore, but the bridgehead was not secure. The Wehrmacht had panzer divisions that were flowing into the region, and we know now that the Battle of Normandy would turn into the largest land war ever witnessed in the history of the world so far. And it would go on until August and the capture of Paris. And Hitler knew this, so he arrives at the Wolfschlucht and says to his generals, Gerd von Rundstedt and Erwin Rommel are his two generals in charge, Rommel commanding the frontline troops, the 7th Army, reacting to the American and British and Canadian and French advance. And we're told in that meeting, it was necessarily tense, that Hitler said, not one inch of ground to be given up. Stand and hold. And we're told in that meeting that Rommel said to Hitler, and Rommel at that point was the most popular general Hitler had been for several years. The press had promoted Rommel as the common man, not one of those Prussians who was trained from childhood to be cruel, but a man of Swabia, a mensch is what we would call him in America in the 20th century. Rommel said to the Führer, Mein Führer, negotiate with the Allies. Offer them our army, and we'll both take on the Russians. They're the real threat. Hitler threw a fit, as he usually did, but he didn't cashier Rommel. He dealt with him. He said, get back and win the battle. And Rommel said, yes, sir, saluted, and went back. Within a month, Rommel was out of action permanently because he was wounded in an air attack on his vehicle, driving from a headquarters to a headquarters. I bring all this up because the drama is obvious to people in Russia, as it is to Germany, as it is everyone who has read the closing of the months of the Second War. Putin is not in a strong position when it comes to his generals. Any one of them could be Rommel. And we know that the record says that Rommel did not participate actively in the plot against Hitler. However, he knew about it because his chief of staff did participate actively. And Putin must, of course, is aware of the fact that any one of those generals could be the next leader of Russia. So from the Russian point of view, what is it that they must achieve? What is the risk in achieving it? Thank you.
This is a delicate moment, not just delicate from the standpoint of the leader, Mr. Putin, but delicate for Russia as a whole, because although Americans don't want to look at Russia through its own eyes, it is worth doing so, if only to understand truly what the stakes are for Russia in this enormously risky gambit they took in invading Ukraine. They're engaged in a renovatio. Not a renovatio a great Roman word for renewal and a rebirth of the vision of the nation. They're engaged in a renovatio not to recreate the great Romanov Russian Empire, which was unwieldy and doomed to failure, or the Soviet Empire, which was equally and more speedily doomed to failure, but rather a Russia that includes historical and real places that are still Russian. And that, of course, is the Donbas and parts of Ukraine and Crimea. And that is non-negotiable at this point. They've already taken much of it. And the whole point now is to finish the renovatio in a way that will work, that will last, that people will accept. Well, in order to do that, the Russians, in their third iteration in this war, in the third phase of this war, have embarked on a final offensive war termination phase that will be unleashed and must be consummated for Russia to destroy Ukraine, not as a country, but rather as a tool for the West to attack Russia. Again, in their minds, but that's what they believe. And so in order to do that, they have amassed an enormous force, which we've talked about previously. But the element of Belarus involvement is key here, because Belarus, Lukashenko, but the related Belarusian and the Russian peoples will embark on an offensive from the north, not to attack Kiev, but to move through the oblasts of Zhytomyr and Vinnytsia in order to cut Western Ukraine off from the rest of Ukraine and effectively to destroy the Ukrainian army. This is the war termination offensive. And the delicacy here is severalfold. On one hand, Russia does not want to get into World War III with the U.S. Fortunately, U.S. does not want to get into World War III with Russia. So it is just possible that the partition will occur under the guise, as I described a few minutes ago, of a de facto, highly cynical partition. But also, Russia needs to create a rump, neutral, demilitarized Ukrainian state that is between NATO. And remember, if this actually comes to pass, Western Ukraine will become part of NATO, but there'll be a rump, neutral, buffer Ukraine in between, and then Novorossiya will be reincorporated. Now, the big question is how, in the wake of a great victory, presuming this will be a great victory when it happens, if it happens, Russia has to be able to maintain a balance and maintain realistic war objectives. And it has to do so in a way that a defeated West will accept. And a defeated West will accept it because there is, if not a golden parachute, then at least, like Rumpelstiltskin, a little rope they can climb down the tower from. Or actually, in the case of Rapunzel, of course, it was her hair. But the fact is, the U.S. needs a way out along with the rest of NATO to accept this partition. And for that to actually be consummated, there must be a level of restraint and a level of acumen on the part of Russia and Mr. Putin to know when to stop, how to couch terms in ways that both sides can accept, and how to lead to a conclusion in which the rump Ukraine cannot be accessed by NATO again to build up forces to attack Russia. This is going to be a very delicate situation, and it will require restraint by the U.S. and NATO, of course, which it hasn't shown for 20 years, but also equally restraint and sensitivity from Russia. And it is an open question as to whether such restraint exists in the hearts and minds of either party.
In 1943, Roosevelt said unconditional victory.
Right.
And that weighed on the Allies after North Africa, weighed on them because there was always suggestion we can negotiate with the Germans. Is that a problem for NATO now, the unconditional surrender? And is it a problem for Russia that there is not a compromise on the table? Unconditional surrender is the NATO side. Does Russia have a way of negotiating?
Russia is in a better position to achieve its goals than NATO and the U.S. And why is that? Because Russia has embarked from the very beginning on a constrained operation, and it can define victory in a limited way.
Right.
The U.S. and NATO have embarked on an unconditional surrender, bring Russia to its knees, get rid of Putin approach.
And take Crimea, yes.
Yes, and they're going to have to give that up. And the question is, how can they give it up? When faced with a choice between World War III or a compromised peace, where you have to go back on many of the things that you said were carved in stone, can you do that?
Can you do it in an election cycle? Because that's where 23 begins the 24th cycle.
Well,
and Germanicus, can Russia negotiate without Putin?
Well, Putin is at this point the leader.
Yeah.
And he's a necessary to the entire, conclusion of this. And that happens because when Putin goes, there'll be, as it was with Rome or any other imperial enterprise, there'll be a period of uncertainty, even civil war, who knows what. But right now, Russia is in a better position. Now, NATO is in the worst position imaginable. And it's their own fault that they're in this hole. But they have to find a way to get out. And that's why I raised this issue of a coalition of the willing intervention in Western Ukraine, because it creates this fictional alternative narrative as a pathway to escaping.
Can NATO negotiate without Zelensky?
Well, Zelensky will probably be, as they say in the Maltese Falcon, the fall guy.
But they've made him the hero. They put him on the cover of magazines. Can they negotiate with or without him?
The likelihood of his leaving to one of his fancy Tuscan villas or his great mansion in Miami will be the probable outcome. He could be retained if he changes character, which he should be able to do as an actor, and then become, but I don't know what the hard lines are going to be in a negotiation. I mean, Russia will demand that Zelensky goes. The U.S. will demand that Russia give things back. But I think here's the deal with the whole idea of raising this prospectus that I have tonight. And that is that it's in the U.S. interest now to give Russia what it wants. It's in the U.S. interest now to be a participant with Russia in a partition of Ukraine. It's creepy and it sounds terrible because it is terrible. But the fact is, there has been a decisive shift in the dynamics. U.S. leadership in NATO, NATO itself, the U.S. position in the world will all be, three sheets to the wind if we just let Russia win. So we've got to now become a participant in Russia achieving its goals.
Well, we negotiated with Saddam Hussein 14 years before we hanged him. So
yes.
I can imagine that.
We've done a lot of things like that. We did that in Korea. In Vietnam, I mean, yes, it is imaginable. It's just going to be a shock, a cognitive dissonance for Americans.
Let's go to the theater, Germanicus, and enjoy some comedy. There'll be the usual hambone events around an adolescent male and a beautiful woman, and we can laugh. Germanicus is Makovlejos. Guys, I am John Batchelor. We're headed to our theater in Londinium after we sacrificed the god Augustus. Again, life is so much easier in the first century AD. Rome insists there's only one victor, always, no matter the contest, Rome. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.